Hello and welcome to Outlook from the BBC World Service. This is Lucy Ash with more extraordinary personal stories from around the world. On today's programme, the British actor who once worked as an undercover cop investigating drug dealers and money launderers tells us about the strain of his job. After 10 years of leading a double life, he says he was as broken as a biscuit. Also in the programme, the American poet who suffered from one of the world's rarest diseases talks about her long road to recovery. But first, the actor Liam Thomas spent a decade working as an undercover police officer across Britain and Europe, keeping company with drug lords, arms dealers and all manner of serious criminals. As a teenager, he wanted to be an actor, but his father, who was a policeman, told him that wasn't a proper job for a man. So after a spell in the Navy, Liam joined the ranks. He was a rising star and had become a top detective in the Metropolitan Police's flying squad before he was 30. Then he was approached to work undercover. Covert policing has become a touchy subject here in the UK after revelations that a Metropolitan Police Constable, Mark Kennedy, had sex with a couple of women while posing as an environmental activist. So what's it like to have a job in which you constantly have to deceive people? When Liam came into the Outlook studio, he began by telling me about the reality of daily life undercover.
Not dissimilar to other forms of policing, it's 90% boredom. I think the difference is the 10% is a much higher octane of adrenaline than many other forms of, you know, mainstream policing. And I think that does become like a sort of addictive drug.
So what would you be doing when you say 90% of it is boring? You'd be sitting in a pub observing people or what?
No, just actually sort of preparing your covert identity or legend so that it would stand scrutiny, and that takes time. And depending on the case, and at that time, you know, you might be working on several cases in different parts of the country or indeed abroad in tandem, and so it's a sort of slow process.
You've got to keep all these identities separate.
Generally, you'd be probably using one or two identities. But it is a slow process in terms of kind of meandering path to the ultimate goal of buying whatever the goods are or, you know, securing the evidence that you're looking for through covert means on tape or camera.
And does it involve a lot of travelling, a lot of being away from home?
It can do, yes. Yeah. I spent time in Eastern Europe and I worked up and down the UK.
What was your personal life like at this time?
I wasn't married, but I was with, we did subsequently marry, and I'd been with her for a number of years.
Was she in the police as well?
Or? No.
What line of work did she do?
She was in business.
Oh, she was a businesswoman.
Yeah.
So did she understand about the sorts of pressures you were under as an undercover policeman?
No, and I think that can often be the problem. You know, the marriage didn't sort of survive my time in the police. And I mean, we're actually good friends now, which is, you know, I guess I'm lucky in that respect. But it causes problems. You know, speaking to other detectives that worked in that line of work, it's perhaps a failing or sometimes by necessity. But the fact that you don't speak openly to your family about what you're doing and your concerns and maybe some problems that you're having can impact on the relationship. You advise not really to tell them anything because that would potentially compromise, you know, the operation and then therefore, you know, yours and your family's safety. So it makes sense in a way not to talk about the detail of what you're doing.
Looking back, do you remember times that you were, for example, I don't know, somewhere out with your wife, say in a restaurant, and you had to jump up from the table and take a secret call?
Yes, yeah. They would, that would happen. You know, she got used to that. I had a telephone at home, which was a sort of cascaded telephone line, so people I was engaged with at that time could call me. Much later, sort of years later, my ex-wife had said to a friend how, you know, that she didn't recognise the person I became when that phone rang. And we never discussed it. We didn't sort of, you know, she said, you know, that I became somebody else and someone that she didn't recognise. And I think that's...
Like your voice changed?
A little bit, sort of commensurate to the sort of role that you were playing at that time.
But she found that quite disturbing.
Yes, I think so.
What about some of the dangerous situations that you found yourself in doing this work? Because sometimes you walk a bit of a knife edge, don't you?
Mm. Like most UCs, I was threatened. I was threatened with a gun on one occasion.
Tell me about that. What happened?
I was working on a on quite a complicated case, and I was due to meet some of the people involved in that, would come into the scope of that inquiry. And I got in the car, and I had a sense that something wasn't quite right. And I kind of had an idea which direction we should have been going to where we were, the bar that we were going to, and we pulled off into a lane, and one of the guys produced a gun and stuck it into my face and threatened that if I didn't tell him who I was, and that he, as far as he was concerned, I was a police officer. Later, I remember vomiting back at the hotel, but at the time I just had a sense that we'll be okay. And I think that's the thing. I think that in that type of work, it's about staying calm and not sort of panicking. I mean, at that time I told him, yeah, of course I am. I said that I was.
Well, he said, you're a policeman, and you said, of course I am.
Yeah.
And why didn't he blow your head off?
Well, because I think I also told him that I was also the Pope, and the other chap laughed, and there was a bit of nervous laughter and a bit of anger and indignation, and then we went and had a drink. I think one of the times I've been most scared was when I was actually wearing a tape, and the person I was sitting opposite was known for his sort of smart dress, and I was wearing quite a smart suit, which he admired, and he noticed I had something on, and his arm reached out to brush something off my lapel. And I found that just as kind of difficult, because you want to pull away from the hand as it comes towards you.
But you forced yourself not to.
Yeah, you convince yourself it's going to be okay.
So you have to really believe in your power to lie. I mean, you have to lie very convincingly.
Yeah, I can remember we were trained and we were told that when you leave here, you will be a very accomplished professional liar. That's what we aim to achieve.
Psychologically, what impact did that have on you longer term?
You realise there is a price to pay for carrying these identities, these stories around with you, maintaining this illusion, not only to the people that you're working with professionally in terms of sort of the targets, but your family as well.
Because your marriage broke up.
Yes.
One of the things that's been around a lot in the news recently is the idea of undercover policemen sleeping with some of the people that they're observing because of the Mark Kennedy case. Were you ever asked to get information that way?
No, I was never asked to do that. I can remember a joke, you know, are you embedded into the community yet? Meaning, well, I took it. I think we...
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
It didn't happen to me. I mean, it could have happened. That's the reality. There were occasions where perhaps it could easily have happened. I went to Scotland Yard one day to sort of pick up a car, documents that I needed, and met a policewoman that I'd never met before. And that evening, we were sleeping together in a hotel because we had to, because the room might be searched. Now, neither of us spoke about that to our respective partners. I mean, it was very bizarre. It was for our own protection.
But I don't understand, why was that necessary?
Because we were posing as a couple, and that made it easier for me to gain ground quickly in that environment. But it is strange. Looking back, I remember thinking, you know, I mean, I didn't tell my wife at the time, and the office that I was working with didn't tell her husband. It's a sort of strange dynamic.
How long did that go on for?
Well, we were posing as a couple for several months.
So were you very clear when you slept with her that this is my job and
there wasn't
nothing
any
else?
Sexual? We just slept together. We kind of were, you know, you go, you have a briefing at the yard and meet a woman, and then we pick up our luxury Mercedes, get to know each other on the motorway, and check into the hotel. And you know, the next morning, sort of wake up and
you think, who's that?
Yes, just sort of. I mean, we did joke. I mean, I can remember waking up, cuddling someone who wasn't my wife, and leaping out of bed and sort of trying to make a joke of it, because it was, you know, we'd been out the night before and had been drinking and just trying to sort of a very unreal scenario. And I think that's undercover work is one of constant unreal or strange reality that you have to try and make some sense of.
Eventually, the pressures of working undercover became too great, and Liam was unable to remain in the job. He left the police on medical grounds in 2004, having suffered a mental breakdown.
I'd spent some time in a psychiatric clinic, but I didn't really I couldn't understand why I was there. I didn't think I should be there. And I was a bit contemptuous of the other people that I found there that, you know, were there for all sorts of valid reasons. But to me, I thought, where I was at that point, I just felt it was people there for different issues, for alcohol, for relationship problems. And I couldn't understand how they couldn't deal with this, what to me I felt were just ordinary aspects of life, which can be difficult. But if you can't deal with it, come on. And so I refused to sort of take part in the process.
Well, like group therapy?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't go to group therapy. I didn't want to talk about it. And I still didn't feel I needed to be there. And so I was discharged. And eventually, I just basically sort of slept rough for a number of weeks. And I was picked up by the police and taken back to the clinic. But on that second visit, that second admission, there came a point during that stay that I kind of realised that I needed to speak about what had happened. And it was, and, you know, it was a slow sort of process. Very random in a way, some of the sort of memories that came back that I eventually, when I did go into group therapy and want to talk about.
That must have been strange, being picked up on the street by police when you'd been such an elite cop yourself.
Mm.
Did you say to them, I'm a policeman and don't talk to me like this?
Or? No. I mean, I can remember there was a, when I was in the run-up to that, I would get up in the morning and put a suit on and just kind of create the illusion that I was still a police officer, and I would go into sort of coffee shops around Scotland Yard and sort of hoping to bump into people that I used to work with, and or just go out of the house as though I was working.
When you were still living with your ex-wife, was
that?
Mm. So you didn't tell her that they laid you off?
Well, I thought it was strange behaviour, but it was just this sort of routine that I had to try and gain some self-esteem back. One of the legends that I used, covert identities, was connected to horse racing, and a trainer had helped me with sort of establishing that covert identity. And he later said to me, the one thing a good trainer knows is you never take a racehorse out of training and just stick him in the stall and leave him there. And that's what happened to me. And there was no welfare concept. I was just completely cast adrift.
Do you find it hard to trust people now?
I think there is an element of that, yeah. And I think that's the sort of legacy of just even for all police officers, I think, particularly detectives and particularly perhaps undercover detectives, because you are generally targeted at the worst forms of human, or what should be.
You expect people to lie to you.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's what sort of undercover officers do. I mean, they play with lies all the time, and they exist in a world of lies, not dissimilar to what I'm doing now.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because now you've turned your life around, and now you spend quite a lot of time pretending to be someone you're not, but on stage. Tell me about that transition, and how easy was it to do that?
It wasn't difficult at all, and I think it's, in a way, it's kind of perhaps helps you to trust more, because you still work in a world of untruths. You know, your script, your text, you're creating illusions, but there is a beauty now to the illusions and the lies, if that makes sense. There's a poetry there in trying to create art, whereas in what I used to do, there was generally just an ugliness.
Liam Thomas, who was recently in Macbeth. If you want to see what he looks like, please go to our website.